All right, welcome back into the Chase and Big Joe Show here, right here on 102.5 The Game, brought to you by the Omni Natural Hotel. Chase McCabe is on assignment down in Florida. He'll be back on Monday. Dr. Crane, Nick Frazier in, Brando behind the board, and one of the best times of the week. We had to postpone it yesterday because he was doing something, but he's got him today. Welcome in ESPN analyst Tim Hasselbeck to the show. Tim, welcome in, buddy.
What's up? How you doing?
We missed you yesterday, buddy.
You know, it's spring break, so a little travel, conflict, but good to be back on with you.
How was Daytona Beach?
why am I keeping Fire Island all to myself? You know, like.
Oh my goodness! No, welcome back. Like, this is your. Has your son gone off to college yet, or is he an early enrollee?
Not an early enrollee. He'll go, you know, normal time. So. Going to have a normal second semester of senior year, which, quite frankly, I wish that more kids felt like they had the ability to do. You know, just racing through life, you know, doesn't feel like the healthiest thing for so many of these kids that mid-year and, you know, they mid-year somewhere and who knows, you know, a year or two later might be off to another school.
Yeah, I understand why they go and do early enrollees. I understand that. But the last part of my senior year in high school was memorable and fantastic, and I would never give up that moment for what I had to go to college when I still have 5 years to play for.
No, I mean, it's really, you know, one of the things that's wrong. People talk about what's wrong with college football and all that stuff. You know, one of the things that's wrong is, you know, guys are signing on National Signing Day in December, you know, to go enroll in January, and sometime between December and January when they enroll, you know, the head coach has either been fired or left for somewhere else. And so just when you look at the calendar and, you know, when these things happen, when decisions have to be made, and then, you know, who it actually is benefiting, it would be very hard to convince me that it's good for, you know, in some of these cases, you know, minors, kids that are 17 years old, you know, so, yeah, there are a lot of things that are wrong and need to get fixed. And certainly the calendar of events, you know, in terms of all that stuff, you know, would play into it for me.
When you when I reported to college, it was 1st of August. When you went to Boston College, was that the same? Because that's how it was back then, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that it was, you know, because I was a local kid. You know, I probably was driving up and doing the summer workouts, you know, the lifting and running, you know, earlier than a kid that was from Pennsylvania or somewhere like that. But, yeah, nowadays, look, if you're going to play Division I football, you are going to report, you know, just after graduation. In fact, I just, you know, was told by one of my players, you know, he has a report date that's before graduation.
And so, no.
Again, I do think that we're racing people through things. I just, you know, had, you know, was out with, you know, some guys were working out with Jordan Palmer out in California, and there's a quarterback that was out there working out, super talented kid. He's, you know, he's committed to, you know, an SEC program. And there's this talk about him reclassifying up. You know, so basically he's got multiple years of high school left, but the idea of maybe becoming a senior. And
right.
And then I just read the story that this quarterback at Alabama has been there like 4 years or something, and he's 19 years old. And I'm just, you know, I'm like, why race through this? You know, like why be in the hurry through this? And, you know, you get the rest of your life to be guys like you and me, you know, old and bald and you know, like,
right.
Like, what's the hurry, man? Like, enjoy, you know, especially nowadays where, look, you can actually be making some money while you're, you know, still playing in college. And in some cases be making money while you're in high school. So, yeah, it feels like we are, you know, in some of these instances, you know, racing people through, you know, a process that they should enjoy.
Amen to that. All right, talk to the NFL free agency. There's still a little bit out there that's going on. The Titans, they signed 15 guys, and some have a problem with this, Tim, and I don't. 12 of the 15 they signed have a relationship or cross paths with Borgonzi, Robert Saleh, or Brian Daboll. I got no problem with that because they found guys they fit can fit their scheme and they like, and people are like, well, those teams are terrible. But every bad team has good players. I don't mind this.
Oh, for sure. Every bad team has good players. And, you know, the Raiders were terrible. Would people like Max Crosby? Like, yeah, they would. I mean, maybe everyone but the Ravens. So I guess what I would say is, like, that to me is the issue, or what I'd be focusing on is the team's record. What I think you need to take into consideration is, you know, if you have a previous relationship with somebody or experience with them, that means you know kind of their professionalism, how they approach practice, their ability, you know, what they were able to do, because you would see them, you know, at a, much more in-depth level than you would, you know, just somebody that your pro scouting department has evaluated. But beyond that, you're going to have a more intimate knowledge of the player's injury history. And, you know, in free agency, you know, some of the biggest indicators are age and injury history. I remember getting a call. Now, I was no longer playing, but I was getting a call because the Giants were thinking of signing Anquan Boldin. And I got a call from the Giants, and they said, how often did he practice? And I was like, I mean, it wasn't like I was really trying to take inventory of it. But, you know, their concern was he had such – remember how tough he was, right? Yeah. Like, he just was one of those guys. But so he was on the injury report a lot. And, you know, it was like, did he have a broken foot? He had a broken jaw. His shoulder was bothering. Like, he had this long injury history. And what they were trying to figure out was, okay, like – are we signing damaged goods at this point, or is this, you know, just a tough guy that, you know, was dealing through, you know, the bumps and bruises of the NFL? And, you know, it just struck me back then to be like, that's crazy. Like, that they're calling me to find out about his injury history, 'cause like, they don't know.
Right.
So, I do think if you're the, you know, look, if you're the head coach of the Jets and you're signing an edge rusher that, you know, had his knee scoped, like, you know what kind of practice time he missed because of, you know, that knee surgery, if any at all. And so I generally think that if you're signing somebody, it's because you have such a good basis of knowledge, you know, that is better than other people, and you feel good about signing the player.
So adding on to that, Tim, Calvin Ridley, you know, taking in somewhat of a restructured deal there. What are your thoughts on that signing along with just his production? Is it just more of looking at him as a, I wouldn't say a damaged good, but is it just the rapport that he has with Brian Daboll at this point?
Yeah, well, and I think that, you know, when, you know, the guys that take pay cuts, it generally is because they know that the market out there for them isn't better. And so, you know, I think that, you know, the year Ridley's coming off of, you know, it's, you know, it basically would put you in a situation of, you know, not necessarily negotiating from a position of strength, and then the hope that, you know, you can, you know, what you're still going to get from, you know, the Titans is going to be better than, you know, what you would get somewhere else. And you feel like you can have a good year. Just, you know, like pulling up his stuff. I mean, you just think about it for him, you know, and obviously, you know, didn't play, you know, a ton of games last year, but he had 303 receiving yards, right? Zero touchdowns. You know, this is a guy that, you know, in three of the previous four seasons, he had over 1,000 yards receiving. You know, in three of the previous four seasons, he, you know, that he played in, he had over 100 targets, right? So, you know, I think sometimes for a player, when their numbers go down, their production goes down, and they feel like there are a number of factors to it, and they know what the market, you know, potentially is for them, you know, that's why, you know, you take a contract that's maybe a little more digestible for the team, more so than, you know, a relationship with a coach.
Right, absolutely. We'll have more with Tim Hasselbeck on the other side right here on Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. back here on Chase McJoe, 102.5 The Game. Dr. Crane, Nick Frazier, alongside Big Joe Dubin and Brennan Bigsby behind the glass. Here with Tim Hasselbeck. Tim, we were talking before the break about Calvin Ridley and the rapport with this team. You know, Wandell Robinson, another player they brought in through free agency. How do you see that distribution happening between those two wide receivers?
Yeah, I mean, I think Robinson, obviously, you know, that one feels much more, you know, fresh, new, relationship-based. And look, he's a really productive, you know, or was, you know, last year anyway, a really productive player. So, you know, in terms of, hey, who's the one, who's the two, target share, things of that nature, my guess would be that Robinson would be the guy that, you know, plays inside a little bit more, you know, in terms of the target share, probably gets targeted a little bit more. And, you know, so but I don't know that always means, okay, but you're the number one receiver. I think it just ends up being, like, you know, necessarily like more role on the team in terms of how the players use, right? Like, you could use an extreme example, like Wes Welker played inside, you know, majority of the targets, but Randy Moss was outside and, you know, probably ended up scoring more touchdowns.
Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong with this assessment, but like hearing Brian Daboll back when he was introduced as the Titans offensive coordinator, someone asked him about just his style of offense, and he responded with just, it's how you present your play style, your play design. And to me, I think with the rapport he had with Calvin Ridley at Alabama, connecting that with just game planning as a defense, if you have to game plan for the Titans offense, I would say it's more of just, I would say disguising things and using Wandell Robinson to more of their advantage.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Robinson is just, he's a unique player because, you know, of his, you know, quickness, his, you know, ability to be dangerous once the ball is in his hands, you know, maybe some of the, you see some of the stuff that like the Rams have done with, you know, Puka Nacua, where, you know, like, I'll call them like jet sweep type stuff, but how it helps your run game with kind of, you know, things out the, you know, you can block a run front side. You have the ability to hand the ball to somebody that's going in motion, going the other direction, you know, who's a dangerous, you know, ball carrier, you know, things like that. Like, I think those end up being significant factors, you know, and just, you know, looking at Robinson, though, like this is why I think it's a certain way. You know, Robinson, so people understand, each of the last 2 years has had 140 targets. Like that's a massive number of targets. And so he's had over 90 catches in each of the last 2 years. He scored a total of 7 touchdowns. You know, receiving in those 2 years. So I just, you know, I say that because, you know, there are elements of, you know, guys that convert on third down, that move the chains, that are wildly productive players that, you know, that every team wants, but you still need to score touchdowns. That's why, like, I remember a few weeks ago, we were having a conversation about Mike Evans. Listen, Mike Evans catches touchdowns. You know, you go look at, like, Davante Adams. I don't know how many catches Davante Adams had this year, but he led the NFL, well, it wasn't 90, and he led the NFL in touchdowns. And, you know, like, there is an element with these bigger, more physical receivers with big catch radiuses that they just get opportunities inside the 20-yard line to score. And that's why I do think that, you know, Robinson's role, I think, is always, at his size, is always going to, you know, there's going to be limits to it in terms of how he's used.
I'm with you on the touchdown part because you probably don't remember this guy, but Brad Baxter, fullback for the Jets, all he did was score touchdowns from a yard out. Every time they got inside the one, they'd hand it to Brad Baxter. He'd score a touchdown. That was his only goal. And I get, you know, nobody cared that he got 3.2 yards per carry. He got into the end zone. So you're exactly right there, Tim.
Yeah, I mean, I think that not every receiver, you know, gets used exactly the same, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think that, you know, when, and I think that's where teams can really do a good job in their scouting department and their roster construction of how they, you know, how they are doing it. Like, just pulling it up is where, you know, we're sitting here looking at it. Devontae Adams had 60 receptions this year for under 790 yards, but he caught 14 touchdowns.
Ooh.
And if you just look at throughout his career, in 2022, he caught 14 touchdowns. In 2020, he caught 18 touchdowns. You know, he's been a double-digit touchdown guy, you know, in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I mean, in 8 different seasons. So in 12 years of playing in the NFL, 8 different times he caught double-digit touchdowns. So, you know, in a terrible year with the Jets in 2024, he caught 7 touchdowns, which is what Wandale Robinson on a, you know, on 185 catches in 2 years, you know, had in the last 2 seasons with the Giants. So I just think that how you build your roster in terms of, okay, this guy's good at this. You know, somebody, you know, introduced me to the term years ago with system-specific scouting, right? And so what that really means is, okay, no, like, this is the role that you play in our system. Like, we're not just adding a receiver because he was good somewhere. Is the stuff that he does relatable to what we need in terms of how our roster is constructed, in terms of he's the guy that plays inside, he's the guy that plays outside, he's the guy that does a great job of blocking, you know, on perimeter throws because we major in that type of stuff. Hey, is he a tight end that can do the things that we ask our tight ends to do? And I think that's why, you know, with Robinson, I think he's going to have a ton of targets. I think he's going to have a ton of catches. I think he's going to touch the ball a lot.
Right.
And I think the majority of the times he touches the football are going to be within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, that's a good point there. Let me ask you this. Why the Dolphins signed Malik Willis, right? So he needs weapons. Why would they trade Jaylen Waddle away to the Broncos?
You know, I think it's probably an understanding of where you are, you know, the cost of a player, you know, other contracts that you have up, what you can get. You know, do you think you're going to be good right now, or is it better to be good in a couple years? You know, I think one of the things that comes up quite a bit is, like, I kind of bring it back to, and people will remember, you know, when Mike McCarthy and Ted Thompson, the general manager of the Packers and head coach at the time, when they made the move from Brett Favre to Aaron Rodgers, they had all just signed new contracts. If they were going into the last year of their deals, they would have never done something like that.
Mm.
So, you know, I do think that oftentimes moves that teams are making, you know, while the runway, we all know, is not very long, you know, 2 bad years and you'll get fired, right?
Yep.
So, but year 2 is much, to be good in year 2 is much more important than being good in year 1.
No.
Right?
Yes.
And so, you know, I think that a move like that is more about, let's make sure that we're getting better in year 2 with our new quarterback and new head coach than necessarily what 2026 looks like.
So it's the Dolphins kind of waving the white flag on this season?
Yeah, I don't know that it's like, I don't know that I would agree with, like, the characterization of it being like, hey, it's the white flag. But I think essentially acknowledging we're not a Super Bowl team. Yeah, sure. Like, you know what I mean? Like, yep. Like, we're not doing every single thing we can to make sure that 2026, that we're squeezing everything out of the 2026 season as possible. Yeah, I think that's absolutely fair. Doesn't mean you're tanking. Doesn't mean, because I do think that you're building for something. I do think there is carryover year over year, but I also don't think that the Dolphins are sitting here saying, yep, like, we're making moves to be a Super Bowl team this year, right? And I think there are a lot of teams that do that, but I don't know that that means that it's tanking.
Okay.
Tim Hasselbeck's on the line with this. Tim, you know, one of the units that gets, you know, forgotten about in football is the special teams unit. With the Titans bringing in Tommy Townsend, you know, it just seems since Ryan Stonehouse that this franchise has never seemed to solidify a punter. Just where do you see Tommy Townsend fitting in with this group, and is it enough for Bones Fossil to kind of restructure the special teams to make it what it used to be?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that it's kind of been a disaster. You go back 2 years, it was 2 years ago, it was running together now. It was a disaster, right? Like costing games and, you know, kind of forcing, you know, the hand. I think the commitment to Fossil is a big deal. I think he's widely viewed as, you know, one of the best special teams coordinators in the NFL. And I think, you know, wouldn't it be surprising at some point in the future you end up seeing him as a head coach. So I think that's a big investment. And I think investing in the kicking game, well, it's like never fun. It doesn't, you know, probably generate the talk radio or, you know, ESPN buzz that other things, you know, generate. Man, there's so many hidden yards in that stuff. And, you know, you think about, you know, you look at certain teams and the number of one score games they play in the season, like that literally could be the difference. So I think it's an encouraging thing. I often think that defensive coaches value that more than offensive coaches just because they know the stress of defending a short field versus defending a long field. They know the stress of, you know, just being willing to, you know, to take points. You know, I think that's one of the things that, you know, if you look at, you know, the Niners, just even last year, you know, I thought there were times that the Niners were going against the curve a little bit in terms of being like, yep, we're going to be okay kicking field goals. And I think it's benefited them. You know, so I look, you know, Saleh was a part of that. So I think those things are important as people, you know, kind of get into this really aggressive nature, analytics, and it makes sense to, you know, to go for it on these fourth downs or go for it in some of these red zone situations.
Tim, I value your opinion as an NFL analyst so much, and I apologize for my co-host asking you a question about a dumb punter. I apologize for that.
Hey, no, here's the thing, though. It's actually great. Like, it doesn't make, you know, it's one of these. I think we talked last week a little bit about, like, there'll be this, like, second and third wave of free agent signings.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, oh, yeah, and we got him. Like, no big deal. Like, no one was going crazy about it. But when you look up at the end of the season, you're like, dang, like that was as impactful as, you know, some of the day one signings that we were talking about. So look, it's not an exciting topic,
right?
But at the same time, it is, I mean, it's, if you really care about your team, look, it's as important as a lot of things that get done.
Oh, I'm with you on that. Hey, real quick, and I know we're up against the break, but I want to ask you, this is actually a serious question. Are you concerned about AI invading recruiting? Because there's this thing out now where guys are uploading their video, and it's AI. They're making these plays that never happen. Is this a concern, Tim, or is this a nothing burger?
I think ultimately it's nothing. I mean, I remember back when guys were getting accused of, like, just speeding up their film. But it's wild, and I think the biggest thing is the people who will win in all of this, right? From a player perspective, it's the kids that are more concerned about being in love with playing football and just becoming the best they can possibly be,
right?
Rather than the people that love the attention of recruiting, right? I see it all the time. It was like kids love collecting offers. Like, you can only go one school.
Right.
So you can collect all the offers you want, but you can only go to one school. So, like, that's, you know, there's that side of it. And then from a college perspective, the people that are going to win are going to be the people that actually do the work. I have been amazed in the role that I have now at Ainsworth at how lazy people are in recruiting.
Wow.
It's absolutely crazy. The lack of leadership, the laziness, basically just chasing somebody else's evaluation of somebody. And I think, you know, we're just talking about system-specific scouting and things of that nature. If these schools would actually do the work themselves and do the research themselves and really investigate, you know, like, hey, is this, like, tell me about this player. What do you think? Like, I'll give you an example. There's a local school in state that offered a kid of ours yesterday. But before the head coach pulled the trigger on the offer, he was like, look, this is our evaluation. Am I seeing it correctly? And then beyond that, tell me what kind of kid he is. And like, they're doing their work. And I think that, and for example, they're going to be right on the player because of it. And whereas I think when people just come in and they're just, you know, just following the leader because they've seen what somebody else has done or there's some rating, it literally is a dog chasing its tail.
Oh, that's such a good analogy for that. I just it's all changing, man, and it's just something that we're crazy. Before we go, one more real quick. I've got a list here. The last time a Power 4 team knocked off a number one seed, the last time a Power 4 team knocked off a number one seed, Boston College, the last time they knocked off a number one ranked team, do you remember what it was?
Is this heading into like March Madness or
football? This is football. The last time a Power Four football Boston College team knocked off the AP ranked number one team.
I'm gonna go back to Glenn Foley, Notre Dame, right after Notre Dame, I think, beat Florida State.
You are an absolute legend. You are correct. 1993. Well done.
Look at that. Is that it?
Yeah, that's it.
I felt like Matt Ryan had a stretch where maybe he beat like a Georgia Tech team or somebody that was really good, but I don't know that they were ever the one, you know, the number one team.
That was it. Tim, as always, man, we love talking to you.
How many brackets do you fill out?
I stop at like 20.
Unbelievable. How do you doesn't that take the enjoyment out? Like, you don't even know what you're cheering for?
Exactly, Tim.
Zero. Because right? ESPN, your company does it all for me, so I just sit back and watch.
I think five's the proper number.
Right? You think Alexander the Great stopped at one country? No, I mean, he conquered the world. That's what I'm doing here, Tim.
I'm just one bracket, and that way, you know, when a game comes on, like, I know which team I want to do well, you know? Like, if five brackets, you're going to be like, which one are you cheering for? It's like the guy that's like, well, I don't care about it for that. I don't care about, you know, Calvin Ridley's stats for that fantasy team, but I do for that. I'm like, nah, come
right
on. Like, that's
well,
awful, man.
That's why you are where you are, and we're over here. So you always win. So you're right. Hey,
we're
man.
The same, man. What are you talking about?
Appreciate you, brother. Thank you, as always.
See you, fellas.
All right, Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN. We get lucky with these guests, man, with Tim and John McClain, Drew Maddox yesterday, and Fisher. We could talk all day long. All right, we'll take a break. We're running late. Back with more right here on 102.5 The Game.